Tonight we continue that journey by looking in this first half at three men who were three of the most important early writers who actually confronted heresy, who confronted error now, who stood out against and tried to refute false understandings of Jesus that they came up against in their world. Firstly, a little look at the map which you've seen before, and a reminder of you, it's easy enough, the material is readily enough available. I'm going to look with you briefly again at this area called Asia Minor. It's present Turkey, actually, but it was the Roman province of Asia Minor here. And names like Ephesus are familiar to you from Paul's letter to the Ephesians. Names like Colossae, Paul's letter to the Colossians. We know that Paul spent 3 years at Ephesus teaching there. It's mentioned in the Acts of the Apostles. He wrote to this area, as I said. We know that John went there, the beloved disciple. Mary, the mother of Jesus, tradition has, lived with him there. We know that John wrote the Apocalypse from there during that worldwide or Roman-wide persecution of Domitian. This was the area of the first real thriving of Christianity. A marvelous success story, you might say, of the spread of the Christian word. It was also the area of the first big heresy of the church, if you could put it that way. And it's interesting that the two came together. Perhaps one would expect that. The heresy I'm going to speak about is Gnosticism. Now, a big word, and I'll try and put it as simply as I may, just the main outlines of it that we need to know. And this area of the world was a great meeting place. It's called Asia. It's the meeting of the East here, and there you've got Byzantium, or what later becomes Constantinople, the Dardanelles, you know, Gallipoli Peninsula. This is the meeting of Europe and Asia. And the port of Ephesus, like the port of Corinth over here, they were great melting pots of ideas, and it was a disturbed kind of world, and all thoughts coming from everywhere piled in on each other. And Gnosticism kind of rose in that area. We can see even bits of it beginning in the letters of Paul to the Colossians. We can see bits of it in John's letters at the beginning of the letter of the Apocalypse. But it emerges very clearly at the turn of the century and into the second century. And I just want to speak a bit about it. Difficult as this is to do, I hope I can at least give you a thumbnail sketch of this mental horizon, you kind of call it, a way people or a lot of people were thinking. Now, before we come to Christian Gnostics, just generally Gnosticism, they had this idea of God, and it really was, and this is a key point, an idea of God. God was a supreme idea of the good. It's very, very much to do with balloons that aren't hooked to the ground, you know. It's a philosophy of thoughts and fantasies, not about reality so much. And this God, whom they imagined was the supreme idea of the good, was transcendent, totally unknowable, and could have, by definition, no contact at all with creation. There's no possibility of bridging the gap between the transcendent, infinite God and creatures. So they built up this theory, I think it'd be a good word for it, whereby creation, that's us and the world, were created by a second God, a emanation from the deity, a kind of a part of God, as it were, that almost like the sun and then the rays of the sun coming out. Some secondary created being, but a God, if you like. And that accounted for creation. Now, you can possibly see already, though I haven't given you much to go on, I admit, that when Christianity came along, particularly the Gospel according to John, which incidentally was written in this area, and written for these kind of people, and so uses their kind of language, and that's a very interesting thing to keep in mind as you read John's Gospel, Christ is spoken about as the Word of God, eh? in the beginning, kind of, was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and everything came, you know, the prologue of John's Gospel, through the Word. One can readily, and in fact people did it for a century and more, take the Gospel of John and think, oh, this is just what we want. This is where Jesus fits into our mental framework. Jesus, the Christ, is this kind of inferior God, the Logos, the Word. Logos, Greek word in English. And so they, as people will tend to do, tried to take Christianity and accommodate it to their worldview. And in fact, they had a wow of a time doing it. And a lot of Christians, as you and I try to explain our Christian understanding in the 20th century world, tried to, as John does in his Gospel, explain Christianity as best he could in this kind of environment. So they went on with that kind of thinking. The logic of it, of course, was that the Word, that's the divine Jesus, was divine but not God. You've seen that, haven't you? Not the supreme creator, unknowable deity. That cuts at the very heart of Christianity, as we've already seen, and so accounted for a whole host of dangerous heresies. To make a break between Jesus and God is to take the very centre out of Christianity. We'll come to that in a moment. When these Gnostics, and please remember, I'm trying to give you in a couple of little points some of their main ideas, and they're very hard to get hold of. I'm not sure I've done it, I've just done my best. When they talked about man, another important concept that'll be right through the thinking of these early centuries, man, woman, according to them, man is a divine spark, a spark from the divine fire, a good image for it. And that spark, which they called in Greek the nous, the nous, the mind, you might say the psyche, you might say the soul, whatever word strikes your fancy, but it was trapped in matter. So you are really, and you can understand why you might even think this yourself at times, a spiritual power, but you're trapped in this body. That's their image of humanity. Again, a terrible heresy about humanity, but let's leave it. That's their image. And so the way of redemption for the Gnostics, and you can see again how they would use Christianity for their purposes, was to redeem the soul or the spirit or the mind, more literally, to liberate it from matter. And those who, the way to liberate the person, a human being, from matter was by enlightenment. And the word for enlightenment in Greek, the word for knowledge in Greek, is gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S. You get it in medical terms, don't you? A prognosis, diagnostic medicine, and so on. How do you know what the thing is? So gnosis, hence the name Gnostic. Because they claim, these initiates, the leaders of these groups, the gurus or the whatever of this particular group, they claim that they were the privileged ones who alone had access to this esoteric knowledge. And so if anyone wanted to be saved, if anyone wanted to be redeemed, if anyone wanted the spark of the divine fire in their psyche to be liberated from this awful coil of mortal coil of Shakespeare, the flesh, then they had have to come to these teachers and find out all these ceremonies and knowledge and intricate relationships between the gods. And can't you imagine making $1 million with people coming in on Saturday and doing 2 hours of this till they get sick of it and try something else? So there's a lot of people making money out of this as well. And it's a rage among an insecure people like us searching for meaning. They'll almost do anything for it. That's a very quick sketch of Gnosticism. You can see how it leads into it has ramifications that are incredible, like in spirituality about the relationship between the soul and the body. It's not incarnational, is it? The body is not good in this. The body is the matter that traps the soul. So as highly ascetical, they might go in that direction. Certainly it's not about redeeming the body. It's precisely about redeeming from the body. You can obviously see how a Jesus who got caught up into that philosophy, his body would have no significance at all. In fact, they denied the reality of his body. it was apparent it was only an appearance of a body, because no divine being could have our body. It's hopelessly... So it's cutting at the very heart of incarnation, body, and so on. And while it concentrates on the divinity of the Word, who is Jesus, it denies the identity of him with God. That's a second lower echelon divinity. Sorry about that, and I hope that's reasonable. I'll move straight on and just presume you've got a feel for it.